Now we come to another instance here in Matthew 17. And when they were come to the multitude, there came to him a certain man, kneeling down to him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and sore vexed, for oftentimes he falleth into the fire and oft into the water. And I brought him to thy disciples, and they could not cure him. Then Jesus answered and said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him hither to me. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. Now notice on the side, this boy is an epileptic, not lunatic, epileptic. He has convulsions. But in this case, it's caused by a little demon. Verse 18. Note again, the demon is violent. Upon Jesus' rebuke, the little demon went out from him, and the child was healed from that hour. There's not a great deal of detail given in this report, but one common fact is given. The demons are violent, at least at times. Page 6. You see, I've given you a lot on demons because there's so much of this going on, and I want you to show you what we do know about demon activity in Scripture. Luke 9:37. It came to pass on the next day when they were come down from the hill, much people met him, and behold, a man of the company cried out, saying, Master, that's the word teacher, by the way. See up in the margin, teacher. That's not master. I beseech thee, look upon my son, for he is mine own child. And lo, a spirit taketh mine only child. And lo, a spirit taketh him, and he suddenly crieth out, and it teareth him, that he foameth again, and bruising him hardly, departeth from him. And I besought thy disciples to cast him out, but they could not. And Jesus answering said, O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you and suffer you? Bring thy son hither. And as he was yet a-coming, the devil threw him down and tare him, and Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, and healed the child, and delivered him again to his father. And they were all amazed at the mighty power of God. But while they wondered, every one at all things which Jesus did, he said unto his disciples, and so forth. Now, teacher, now come to the side, verse 39, Behold, a spirit is taking him, and unexpectedly he is crying, and is convulsing him with foam, and scarcely retiring from him, shattering him. So just what all these expressions mean, at least the poor child was in total agony with this demon. They're violent. Verse 42, called little demon, the unclean spirit. Verse 42 again, as he was coming near, the little demon rent him asunder and completely convulsed him. Note demonic violence, but his instant and complete cure. Now, demons are spirits. Now, look at Mark 9. And here we have a very similar one. And when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them, and the scribes questioning with him. And straightway one of the people, when they beheld him, were greatly amazed, and running to him, saluted him. And he asked the scribes, What question ye with them? And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth, and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not. He answered him and saith, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him. When he saw him, straightway the spirit tear him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming. Notice that the disciples couldn't cast this demon out. And he asked his father, How long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, Of a child. Verse 22. And oftentimes it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said unto him, If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. When Jesus saw the people came running together, he rebuked the foul spirit, saying unto him, Thou dumb and deaf spirit. Now notice he calls him a dumb and deaf spirit. I charge thee, come out of him, and enter no more into him. And the spirit cried and rent him sore and came out of him, and he was as one dead, insomuch that many said, He is dead. But Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. Now, here again we have not master but teacher, up in the margin, having a speechless spirit. A speechless spirit. Didn't say anything. And wherein which, if it might apprehend him, it's rending him asunder. He's foaming at the mouth. He's squeaking through his teeth. And he's being dried up. And having seen him, the spirit directly completely convulsed him. And having fallen on the earth, he was rolling, foaming at the mouth. Now this increased violence at the approach of Jesus. You want to notice that. Now we're going to continue at the top of 7. Verse 22 said, It often caused him, cast him even into fire and into waters in order that it might destroy him. And verse 25 told us, He rebuked the spirit, namely the unclean, saying to it, I myself am enjoining you, the speechless and dull spirit. See, these speechless, dull spirits, you come out of him, and no longer might you go into him. Verse 26, And having cried and having convulsed him, much it came out, and he became as if dead, so that the many to be saying that he died off. Now, do you see that kind of casting out of demons? I've never seen one around. And yet all these TV casting out demons, there's absolutely nothing at all. And look at what happens each time these demons are cast out. They don't want to leave. Mark 5. And they came over unto the other side of the sea, unto the country of the Gadareans. When he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs. No man could bind him, no, not with chains, because he'd been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice, and said, What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? Notice how the demon recognizes him. I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. For he said unto him, Come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, What is thy name? And he answered, saying, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there nigh unto the mountains a great herd of swine feeding. And all the devils besought him, saying, See a whole legion in him. Send us into the swine, that we may enter into them. And forthwith Jesus gave them leave. And the unclean spirits went out, and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. They were about 2,000 and were choked in the sea. Now, just let me make a little comment here. Much speculation is done on why did Jesus let these demons destroy the herd of swine. Well, there may be a very simple reason that we may just be overlooking, and that is that God prohibited them from using pigs as meat. And if they were violating God's law, then God saw no reason why not destroy their whole herd. And this he did. So it's not surprising. Verse 14, And they that fed the swine fled and told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that was done. And they come to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion. He was sitting and clothed and in his right mind. They were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coast. You know, when Jesus cured anybody, they wanted Jesus to leave. Now, you don't find any of these TV healers casting out demons or any of the others. You don't find everybody wanting him to leave. They flocked to attend the meeting. And when he was coming to the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but saith unto him, Go home to thy friends, and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee, and hath had compassion on thee. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all men did marvel. Now come back to the margin. I want to review these notes. Consider another Mark's record. Now this man lived among the tombs, had an unclean spirit. 2. He was strong enough to have torn chains asunder and to have shattered fetters. Those are leg bands and arm bands and so forth. Even though they tried to imprison him, they couldn't hold him. No one was strong enough to subdue him. And three, he's thoroughly chopping himself with stones. See, he even hurt himself. This demoniac recognizes Jesus as Son of the Most High God. They continually show a recognition of Jesus. This demon gives his name as Legion, states, and in Psalm 96:5 states, all the gods of the Gentiles are little demons. Now this may account for the names Hercules and Ophiuchus and so forth in the zodiac system, that these demons gave names to these things in the stars and corrupted it to astrology. And Christians are so afraid of the zodiac, which once contained the gospel message, and they've let it go over to those astrologers, which I refuse to do. All right, we can't stay off on that. Point six, and he's completely cured. Now we go to page 8. The large letters L refer to lepers, the big D's to demoniacs. I think it's necessary to include all the records of the healing of demoniacs, so I must show you two more. Now, in Luke 8 record is probably the same man recorded on page 7 in Mark 5, so I will not make specific comments. The last reference is also in Luke, but not much detail is given. So let's look at these just very briefly, going down through the underlined portions. And you can go back and read it carefully. And this man, which had devils, verse 27, the same country of the Gadareans, verse 26, and he wore no clothes, and he neither abode in any house but in the tombs. See those similar things? And he recognizes Jesus, Son of God Most High, torment me not. Verse 29, he broke the bands, just as in the other record, and he calls his name Legion, same as the other one, verse 33. And then went the devils out of the man and entered into the swine, the same as before. And verse 35, he's sitting clothed and in his right mind. And 39, return to thine own house and show how great things God hath done unto thee. So you see, this is probably the same person. So I didn't do anything with it in making side comments. You can see how they do parallel. Now Luke 11 doesn't tell us much. He was casting out a devil, and it was dumb. And it came to pass, when the devil was gone out, the dumb spake, and the people wondered. So the reason he couldn't speak then was because of this demon, which inhibited him. But some of them said he casteth out devils through Beelzebub, the chief of devils. So it was the demon then that was dull. Now this word kophos is funny. They've translated it dull. It's a purely word. King James sometimes translates it dumb and sometimes translates it deaf, which to us are quite different. But I couldn't get anywhere further with this word. And apparently it can go either way. And in any event, it says the dull man, in brackets, spoke. He was dull because the demon in him was dull and prohibited him. Now, we're not told in this case what happened. In the demon that is dull, I've got a note there with the arrow, and speechless, that hinders its host. Now, we're not told whether he tore him up as he came out of him or not, but we have the other instances that give us all the details, and I'm sure that the Holy Spirit did not give us all the details on some of these others, because we have so much detail. So in modern casting out demons on TV, I have never seen any violent demons as these all are, and except for this Luke 11:14, which I don't see any information on. Those on TV have no history resembling any of these. On TV, the cures are not evident nor instantaneous. They are told to go home and learn to talk and so forth. I consider casting out demons as done on TV plain deception. That's where I put that one. I put it plain deception. You have seen the pattern in great detail and noted the violence. Page 9. It seems to me that demons and unclean spirits refer to the same beings. We have a few more records stated very briefly. And this is Mark 1 and verse 23. There was in this synagogue a man with an unclean spirit. See, we have to take them up too, and I think those are the same demons that are unclean spirits. We had them paralleled before, saying, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God." You see how well known Jesus was to these demons. That's an amazing thing. And, well, we'll come to another interesting one in just a minute. And by and by. Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Hold thy peace, and come out of him." And when the unclean spirit had torn him and cried with a loud voice, he came out of him. Notice this. Even here, they tore him and cried with a loud voice again. Same violence. And they were all amazed, insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, "What thing is this? And what new doctrine is this? For with authority commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him." But boy, they sure recognized Jesus Christ. Luke 4, "And in the synagogue there was a man which had a spirit of unclean devil, and cried out with a loud voice, saying, Let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know thee, who thou art, the Holy One of God." And Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Hold thy peace, and come out of him." When the devil had thrown him in the midst, he came out of him and hurt him not. And they were all amazed, and spake among themselves, saying, "What a word is this? For with authority and power he commandeth the unclean spirits, and they come out." And then John 9, "And as they went out, behold, they brought to him a dumb man possessed with the devil. And when the devil was cast out, the dumb spake, and the multitudes marveled, saying, It was never so seen in Israel. But the Pharisees said, He casteth out devils through the prince of devils." In this last case, nothing is given of violence, but it seems clear that demon possession was recognized by the violence. And otherwise, they didn't recognize it at all. I think I've given you enough on demons to kind of prove this without any problem. Now we're going to go to a little bit different approach for a minute. Let me call your attention again to Horn's criteria for determining a miracle. Here are his further expansions of 1, 2, and 3. We're going to just look at these three. The first one, the first character of a miracle is an important end and worthy of its author. For what probability is there that the Almighty should specially interpose and suspend the laws by which he governs this world without any necessity for a frivolous reason, inconsistent with his wisdom and unworthy of his greatness? Every miracle, then, must have a useful end, and one to which second causes are inadequate, as to authorize a prophet or to establish a revelation. An end so wise and so benevolent is well worthy of the Supreme Being. Now look at this side note I have. Here are his further expansions. Does the charismatic type, especially on TV, of healing meet one? This number one criteria. One might almost allow that if these healings take place, they have a useful end. Some may, but do they all? That's the question. Is it of value to cure some 80-year-old of one thing so he can suffer and die with something else? Is that of value? I mean, when a person gets old and expects to die, look at the age. Notice Psalm 90. "The days of our years are 70 years and 10. A score is 20, so that's 70 years. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we fly away." So you see, God says that the age is 70, 80 years if you have that strength, and you should be thankful for that. So why do you want to cure these 80-year-old people and prolong their miseries so that they can die of some other disease? Because they're going to die. You're not going to stop them from dying. And yet that's what's going on. And a lot of it is preying upon elderly retirees that don't want to be crippled up. And this is they want to be healed of cancer. They want to be healed of all these things they've got, because it's nice to be well. There's no question about that. But they prey on these people. And it's fraudulent. Now look at the second decision you have to make. Do they meet this? A second criterion of a miracle is that it be instantaneously and publicly performed and before credible witnesses. Now that's a big one. It has really several parts in it that they have to meet. It must be instantaneously done. There has to be a public watching it, and before credible witnesses. That last one is the ticklish one, credible. A business huddled up in a cloister before a few interested monks is not properly attested. But when an action is performed before the public eye, as the miracles of Moses and those of Christ were, or before witnesses who have totally exculpated themselves of having any end but that of truth, we have all the attestation we can reasonably desire. Now, let's go from there. We've got it stated. Coming to the side. Consider criterion number two, here and expanded on page 10. A person's say-so is not enough to establish a miracle. That's the first thing. In other words, just because somebody says, I have cancer, that's not enough to establish the basis of the miracle. And favorites, that is, favorite healings of the TV healers, are usually not visible. Nothing that you could see anyway. And here is the expanded, this number two, on the bottom of page 9, is further expanded to a subdivision 1 and 2 on page 10. Because this is really the important one. Well, it's really subdivided 1, 2, and 3. Three subdivisions, because like I told you, it has three parts to it. It must be instantaneously performed. A miracle does not present the shades and gradations observable in nature. Nature proceeds not by fits and starts, but is gradual and progressive in its operations, does not create, but unfolds, nourishes, and causes to sprout and grow, sets to work second causes, which act only by little and little, and do not produce their effect until the end of a certain period. From this rule, the divine agency is entirely free. God said, let there be light, and there was light. Now, looking to the side, you don't go home and learn to say, baby, or gradually learn to walk. And yet you see healers, so-called, on TV, telling them after they've cast out the dumb spirit, and the poor child is saying, why they're saying, she's saying baby. Now he has to go home and learn how to say baby correctly. And then after that, you spend time with him and you teach him and he'll soon learn to talk again. Well, this is not biblical. It was not instantaneous. Therefore, immediately branded as fraud. That's just that quickly. Or satanic, if you want to go that far. I'm not ready to go that far at the moment. I'm more inclined to believe it's plain fraud. Two. Further, publicity or notoriety is requisite. Not that a miracle performed in the sight of a few witnesses is the less a miracle on that account. It's enough that there's a sufficient number of spectators worthy of credit. The notoriety of this or that particular miracle may be more or less restrained by circumstances, and we cannot reject a miracle properly established under the pretense that it has not had all the notoriety which we might have imagined to be necessary. How great soever may be the number of witnesses, we can always conceive a greater. But there is a degree of notoriety which satisfies reason, and if it were not so, testimonial proof could never be complete. Now come to the margin. No ordinary person can visibly tell if cancer is gone. So how can you get publicity or notoriety for the healing? You see, you can't. So they dote on that. With the current wave of errors in medical examinations, even these are no proof. See, because we're getting a lot of errors in the medical field. And they're not proof. They're not positive proof. And cures may be answers to prayer, not a response to a healer. That is, we don't discount answers to prayer. Diabetes is not visible, and diabetes of the late onset variety is controllable. An overweight person showing some diabetic symptoms may not show any upon losing weight. So this is not establishable by publicity or notoriety. You're not going to be able to see any of this. The people in the audience can't say, well, I saw him cured of diabetes, because diabetes would have to take a glucose tolerance test, which would take 4 or 5 hours to show that his diabetes was gone at the very best. And if there was any real question, it would probably have to be run more than once. So in the first place, you'd have to have proof of a glucose tolerance test to prove he had diabetes. A lot of people think they have diabetes, and they've been told this kind of thing without any real testing back of it. So these are things you can't see. So these are no good. These can't rate as miracles at all, because they cannot meet this sub 2 of the item 2 that they have to meet. The publicity and notoriety is requisite. They can't meet it. So all of this kind of thing, of which there's so much, all right, 3 subdivisions. A miracle must, in the third place, be sensible and easy to be observed. In other words, the facts purporting to be miraculous must be of such a nature that the senses of mankind can certainly perceive that both the event is real and its origin supernatural. Now, cancer and diabetes and pains and all these aches and arthritis, all these kind of things, none of these meet the standard of a Bible miracle. None of them. They're, again, as I say, fraud as far as I'm concerned. I'm not willing to class them any worse than that at the moment, and I'm quite satisfied to leave them alone as being fraudulent. Now, if people, I don't know whether it's fair to leave them operate fraudulently, but our government is very much afraid of touching anything that smacks of religious nature. They don't want to get involved with church and state arguments. So now I have put underneath a big asterisk and brought things to a kind of a point right here. I do not think we need to consider the raising of the dead in connection with the modern healers. And I've given you scriptures in the scripture where they raise the dead, and I don't think you need to see any of those, because I haven't seen anybody brought in the platform dead. Somebody that they brought onto the stage and said, well, now this fella died. We've just had him pronounced dead by the coroner, and I'd like to see you raise him up. I have never seen one of those. I don't think you have either, and I don't think you will. Jesus performed miracles as he walked about in his natural life. I have never heard of a healer healing people as he walked along the street. Now, to me, this is an absolute refutation of modern healing. If I had the power and was given a gift of God of actually performing miracles of healing, I would go along the street and I would be able to heal people as the apostles did. In apostolic healing, that you'll see in a little while when we get to him, you'll see they healed people that were taken totally by surprise. They couldn't see the person there suffering. They just raised them, period, healed them. And poor people didn't even know what struck them. All of a sudden they were well after a period of time. And yet you never see that. You always see these healers have to have TV, have to have big incomes, have to publicly perform. And so the end result is that, again, you see the tendency toward fraud. Now, I'm going to have to leave it there until the next lesson. Thank you.